From KMXT in Kodiak, it's the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Terry Haynes.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. For more information, call 1-907-235-4966 or online at alaskaboat.com. Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Fishing for salmon has always been a way of life on the Yukon River. But for the last 4 years, as runs have collapsed, managers have restricted most fishing for local communities. Alaska Public Media's Kavitha George has been reporting on the salmon collapse this summer and has this story about what it means to one young person to miss out on this tradition.
In August, Mackenzie Englishue returned home to a place she's never actually lived.
Gwetchaje means people of the flats, so welcome to the flats.
Gwetchaje, also known as Fort Yukon, is a village of less than 500 people on the upper Yukon River. Kenzie is 20 years old, a student at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. Her mother is from Gwetchaje, and it's clear how connected she is to this place.
Yeah, everybody waves here to each other. We're pretty much all family here.
Kenzie didn't actually grow up here. She grew up with her dad and brother near Chandelier Lake in the Brooks Range, and then lived in Fairbanks. But she visited the village regularly as a child, and it's where she feels most rooted. She's just decided to move here full-time. She's staying with her uncle, Michael Peter.
Are you happy that Kenzie's back?
That depends.
Hey.
She came in yesterday, so ask me that by Friday.
For Kenzie, this move has been a long time coming. Like most of the village, Kenzie is Gwich'in, and growing up, she feels like she's missed out on being among her people.
I feel like I've been waiting my whole life to come back here and be in my community as much as I wanted to.
But Gwetchaje today is very different from the village she remembers visiting as a kid. Life here used to revolve around salmon. The first kings would arrive in late June, and chum would follow in late summer. But 4 years ago, both runs collapsed, and river managers have all but closed fishing ever since. Researchers say climate change is driving the collapse. Residents say it's made life here unrecognizable. Along the riverbank, it's quiet. Kenzie says that's not how it used to be.
Everybody would be going to the river and hopping on boat to go to fish camp, or visiting each other and giving fish to each other, smoking fish together.
Now on the riverbank, half a dozen fish wheels lay idle. Kenzie calls it the fish wheel graveyard.
So here's another fish wheel. You could tell they're getting kind of old and a little bit more fragile.
20 feet across, a fish wheel looks like a big windmill that scoops up fish as they swim upstream. Bees have been on shore so long, the wood is bleached, and they're overgrown with grass. Standing on one of the toppled wheels, Kenzie imagines what it was like to use them.
You would probably sit right here with one of those chairs, and you would just watch the nets catch the fish. And I bet my grandpa was just smiling, watching it, knowing that he's going to be supplied for the winter.
These fish are more than just food. They're culture and community. Kenzie's grandmother made sure she knew the taste of Gwetchaje salmon from a young age.
And she would give me this big bag of fish, and she sat in front of me, and she's like, eat all you want. And I would eat the whole bag, and I'm like, dang, it's out. And then she'd pull out another one.
But Kenzie wasn't around enough as a kid to fish salmon for herself. She never learned to use those fish wheels. And now that she's finally here full time, she's worried she never will.
It's hard, because I feel like I'm almost missing a part of myself.
Every generation of her family before her has fished on this river, and now it's her turn, and she can't. Her uncle, Michael Peter, says that experience, going to fish camp and building a connection to your family through salmon, is an essential part of passing on their culture.
You know, you take your kids out and teach them and show them what we're taught. We're taught how to cut and preserve and smoke fish.
Michael is second chief of Gwichajeb, and he worries that knowledge is getting lost for the next generation.
Do you worry about that for Kenzie?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, she's still learning how to cut fish, too. I mean, you know, since she hasn't really been to fish camp.
I wish I could go to fish camp,
Kenzie says. This loss has fueled Kenzie's sense of purpose. She feels a responsibility to help save her community from giant existential threats like climate change. She's been chosen as a youth leader by the Tanana Chiefs Conference and other organizations. She's become an advocate for climate justice and indigenous rights. She's fighting for more Alaska Native control over fishery management. And it's a lot of pressure.
It's overwhelming, but I'm happy to do it, because if our generation doesn't do it, then there's no one to be able to get that fish back for our future. It's something that we have to do now.
One morning, Kenzie sits with her grandfather, Sonny Jonas, at his kitchen table with a cup of coffee.
There's a lot of changes around here, I'll tell you.
For years, Sonny taught kids in Gwichajeb how to fish and how to make fish wheels. If Kenzie had grown up here, or if fishing were open now, he's the one who would have taught her. Jonas has watched climate change transform the Yukon Flats just in his lifetime. Thawing permafrost has caved in houses. Summers are unrecognizably warm. He says the changes are alarming, but he sees hope in Kenzie.
Yeah, I'm glad to what she's doing right now. She's really trying to get into our culture. Yeah, and I'm really proud of her for that.
As for Kenzie, she's still learning that culture, and she's determined to keep it alive for herself and future generations. In Gwichajeb, I'm Kavitha George.
Statewide support of the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Satellite Technical Services, providing satellite communication solutions for commercial fishermen across the state of Alaska. Information and dealers can be found at satellitewest.com or by calling 206-321-6896. Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund, in recognition of the fishing industry, which provides over 58,000 Alaskan jobs from a renewable source.
Wild king salmon stocks are in decline all over the North Pacific Ocean and Alaska. Some regions outside of Alaska attempt to conserve the fish by limiting sports fishermen to hatchery-only kings. That type of fishery is being studied as a possibility for Southeast Alaska, but as Coast Alaska's Angela Denning reports, the idea is receiving a chilly reception so far.
British Columbia, Washington, and Oregon use what's called mark selective sport fishing to help conserve wild king salmon. Anglers can only keep hatchery kings that have their fins clipped, a marking practice that's done at hatcheries before the juvenile fish are released.
It's really about trying to vet another approach.
Judy Lum is the state supervisor for sport fishing in Southeast Alaska.
And so it was like, okay, well, they do it down here. Can it work for us? And if it can work for us, in what situations, what conditions, or can it be broadbrush, or does it have to be very specific?
Could it be region-wide or just in specific areas? Lum stresses that they are only studying the possibilities. They don't know if a mark selective fishery would help or hinder king salmon stocks, or whether the benefits outweigh any potential costs.
We have all these tools in our toolbox, so to speak, for management. And this would be just one additional tool to the toolbox.
The question originated within the Pacific Salmon Commission. The commission is a regulatory group of U.S. and Canadian governments overseeing that salmon management is fair in both countries. Alaskans involved with the commission asked the state's Department of Fish and Game to consider the potential for a mark selective fishery in Southeast. The department contracted with the University of Washington to do the study using grant money. But so far, Alaskans haven't been receptive to the idea. The state has held community engagement meetings in Juneau, Ketchikan, Klawak, and Sitka, and Lum says they've heard a lot of concerns. Derek Anderson attended the meeting in Klawak.
A lot of people are upset.
He and his wife own a fishing lodge in Craig on Prince of Wales Island. He says the meeting was standing room only and full of emotion. Subsistence, commercial, and sport users came together.
The main voice was no. This is not a good program for Southeast Alaska in any way, shape, or form.
Anderson says they'd rather keep things the way they are and fish by harvest limits, which recently has been a few fish per day for residents and 2 to 3 fish per season for non-residents. He says targeting just hatchery kings would hurt more fish.
There's just not enough hatchery fish in our waters to make that whole thing viable. If you're out there having to fish for hours on end to look for a hatchery fish and you're turning back wild fish after wild fish after wild fish, a lot of those fish end up dying.
Fishermen in Sitka felt the same. Roughly 3 dozen people participated in the community meeting, including 74-year-old Eric Jordan. He's a lifelong troller and says everyone was cordial, but no one wanted the program.
I think there was a lot of skepticism in the audience that this would be a good way to go here.
Jordan is a self-described conservationist and has participated in fish policy for decades, from local fish advisory councils to the State Board of Fish. He says for the program to work, it would have to address the harm of catch and release.
In the salt waters of Southeast Alaska, you're going to need to change the rules to minimize mortality.
How many kings in Southeast are wild or hatchery varies by location. It's complicated because most of the kings originate in non-Alaska areas, both wild and hatchery stocks, and not all hatchery fish are marked. And there isn't hard data that the program is working elsewhere. Marked selective fisheries have been ongoing for about 20 years in some locations in Washington. But has it really been successful? The jury is still out, says Anne Beaudreau. She's an associate professor at the University of Washington conducting the state study.
There's so many different variables to that. And it's actually been a really hard question to answer.
So she says something like it may or may not work in Alaska.
Marked selective fisheries are not a one-size-fits-all approach. The way that they have been implemented and the way that they've been managed has been different depending on where they've taken place.
The study results are expected to be completed by next spring. Reporting for Coast Alaska, in Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard-accepted, hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Madsen, providing twice-weekly service to Alaska's Emerald Isle.